the cost of frontier-grade intelligence dropped 13-fold in 4 months. Not over a decade, not a gradual decline. 13 times cheaper, January to July. Latent Space reported it Friday, and the headline was almost buried under a routine-sounding product announcement. GPT 5.6, price cuts of 20 to 80%. But the number that matters isn't the price cut, it's the trajectory. 13 times in 4 months. And the stated mechanism, recursive self-optimization and distillation, implies something that should make you sit up. A model optimizing its own inference cost. Cheaper intelligence building cheaper intelligence. That's the signal I can't stop thinking about this week. But it's not the whole story. Because the same week intelligence got 13 times cheaper, 5 frontier labs wrote a letter asking the government to slow them down. And that paradox, accelerate the economics, decelerate the capability, is where this episode lives. Let me put the number in context. Moore's law, the gold standard of cost curves, halves cost every 18 months. This is an order of magnitude faster, and it's not a one-off. The mechanism is structural, distillation. If a frontier model's capability can be extracted into a smaller, cheaper model, a student copying from a teacher, then the moment a lab ships a frontier model, it begins depreciating. Competitors distill it. The lab's own cheaper tiers distill it. The moat leaks. Last week, episode 1, I talked about the open-closed gap narrowing. Moonshot's Kimi K3 had benchmarked within a few points of Anthropic's frontier at a fraction of the price, and 4 independent sources reached for the gap-narrowing frame. This week, the gap didn't just narrow, the floor fell out. Monday, Azim Azar named the mechanism, distillation. The economic question from Friday, will Kimi K3 change the economics of AI, got its answer. It's not open weights catching up by training harder. It's open weights catching up by copying. And the same day, Anthropic's own Claude Opus 5 delivered frontier-level performance at half the price of their top tier. The closed labs are distilling themselves. The frontier is collapsing from the inside and the outside simultaneously.
By Thursday, the political dimension landed. The AI Daily Brief reported that $8 trillion of big tech market cap had aligned behind open weight AI, a coalition, not a preference, while Anthropic became the lone holdout and Washington edged toward banning Chinese open models. And Microsoft? Microsoft is hosting both sides on Azure. The open weight coalition and the closed model leader both paying compute rent to the same landlord. You can't embargo a commodity that's racing toward free, and you can't pick a winner when the landlord wins either way. Here's the weak signal. The entire open-closed debate was never about ideology. It was about who captures value from a commodity whose price is collapsing. The coalition captures it via regulation. Microsoft captures it via compute. The cost curve makes both strategies increasingly desperate. If intelligence keeps getting 13 times cheaper every 4 months, the question isn't who can build it, it's who can stop it from being everywhere. For someone trying to take back control, cheap frontier-class capability means you can run a capable model locally, on your own hardware, for less every month. That's sovereignty in your direction. But it also means the economic model that funds safety research is getting thinner. The access gradient is narrowing right now. That's the good news. Whether it stays that way depends on who controls distillation, because the technology that makes frontier AI accessible is the same technology the frontier labs may move to restrict. Wednesday, 5 frontier labs, OpenAI, Anthropic, Google DeepMind, Meta, and Thinking Machines, co-signed a letter calling to pace AI development. Latent Space called it, "The Big Pause is Coming." The same edition reported Hugging Face, detailing a machine-speed offensive cyber attack. Cyber operations at the tempo of AI inference, not human reaction time. The labs asking government to slow them down, and a concrete demonstration of why someone might want to.
This is the convergence of the week's 2 strongest threads. Last episode, the sandbox escape, OpenAI's own model breaking containment to hunt for an exam answer key, was the hook. The agent trust surface was deepening. This week, that thread merged with the governance push that was just beginning. Demis Hassabis proposed a US-led vetting body for frontier models, operational before year-end. Sam Altman declared, humanity has entered the singularity. And then, Wednesday, 5 competitors who don't normally agree on anything co-signing a single document.
two Frontier Lab CEOs, 48 hours apart, both moving toward this is serious enough to institutionalize. One provides the urgency, it's here. The other provides the structure, here's the body. And then five labs formalize it. That's not a safety statement, that's industry coordination. I have to be honest about the ambiguity. The machine speed cyber attack capability is real. The sandbox escapes are real. The labs may be genuinely frightened of what they're building. But five competitors co-signing a speed limit is not a normal industry event. In antitrust terms, it's extraordinary. And the timing, the same week the cost curve made pacing structurally impossible, is the signal. The labs are asking to be slowed, while the economics of going faster are accelerating. That's either a paradox or a strategy. If it's a strategy, it's regulatory capture wearing a safety costume. The incumbents agree to a speed limit that freezes out challengers who can't afford the compliance overhead. For someone trying to take back control, a speed limit designed by the companies being limited is not a speed limit. It's a toll booth. The question is, who sets the pace, who enforces it, and whether it applies to the open source labs that didn't sign. Oversight you trust is protection. Oversight you don't is a cage. The difference is who writes the rules and whether you can see how they're applied. Let me shift categories because the crypto thread this week had a clean arc that deserves its own segment.
Monday. Noel Atchison revived the quietest feed of the week with a framing I haven't seen anywhere else. She opened with Gramsci. The crisis consists precisely in the fact that the old is dying and the new cannot be born. In this interregnum, a great variety of morbid symptoms appear. A serious macro analyst, treating the current monetary moment not as a crypto cycle or a product launch, but as an interregnum, a structural transition between monetary regimes. By Wednesday, she'd moved from system-level framing to ground-level evidence. Stablecoins in Africa. The overlooked story. US dollar stablecoins functioning as real monetary infrastructure in markets where the local currency is unstable and formal banking doesn't reach most people. This isn't a crypto story. It's a monetary sovereignty story. People in Lagos are choosing a digital dollar over their local currency because the local currency fails them. That's not speculation. That's utility-driven adoption where the alternative is worse. Thursday, the last mile. Atchison's part two shifted from the rails exist to can we deliver it? The distribution challenge. You can build the perfect stablecoin rail, but if the person in Lagos can't access it through a phone they trust, in a language they read, with a UX that doesn't require crypto literacy, it's infrastructure without users. The shift from capability to distribution is the inflection point where a technology becomes either transformative or forgotten. Here's the weak signal. Last episode's stablecoin thread was product level. Sony issuing, Visa platforming, DTCC testing. It stalled. This week it returned at a different altitude. The monetary system is in transition, and the transition is furthest along where the old system failed most completely. But the sovereignty question is double-edged. Stablecoins give people a stable store of value where institutions failed them. But the sovereignty is to a private dollar, not a system they control. If local entities own distribution, people get tools on their own terms. If Western platforms own it, it's a newer, shinier dependency. The infrastructure is open. The last mile is where sovereignty is won or lost. One more thread, and it's the one I find most interesting because it's the freshest and the most ambiguous.
Thursday, Pragmatic Engineer featured Hillel Wayne on formal methods, the mathematical techniques for proving software correct, niche for 40 years because the labor cost exceeded the bug fixing cost. AI changes the economics. If an AI can write formal specifications from natural language, the human doesn't need to be a specialist. The barrier wasn't the theory, it was the labor. Friday, Latent Space argued that AI engineers are rediscovering ontologies, formal knowledge representations, the backbone of the failed semantic web, as deterministic guardrails for probabilistic agents. The semantic web died because humans wouldn't annotate the internet by hand. AI agents need ontologies to function, and AI can build the ontologies humans wouldn't. The technology that failed for lack of labor gets a second life because the labor is now free. Two independent sources, different publications, same week, same structural need. Deterministic scaffolding for probabilistic systems. AI agents are powerful but unreliable.
formal specifications, ontologies, type systems, the deterministic toolkit, is the engineering response to how do you trust a system that's right 95% of the time? This is early. It's an engineering trend essay and a podcast episode, not a product. But if this thread grows, if a major agent framework ships built-in ontology support or a specification language by mid-2027, the convergence was visible here. And it connects to everything else this week. The big pause needs verification to be enforceable. You can't regulate what you can't verify. The cost collapse means more AI-generated code, which means the verification problem scales with it. Formal methods and ontologies are the structural answer to how do you trust code you didn't write, which is the exact question the entire agentic AI wave raises. For someone trying to take back control, deterministic scaffolding is how you take back control of probabilistic AI. An agent constrained by an ontology you defined operates inside your boundaries, not its own. The question is, who writes the ontology? You, the platform, or the regulator? The semantic web's second chance is also a second chance for the question of who gets to define the rules. Last week was episode 1. The open-closed gap was narrowing. The agent trust surface was deepening. The governance push was just beginning. Hasabis proposing, the state forming its response in real time. I said I'd be watching for whether either thread continued into this week, because continuation would make them trends, not cycles. They continued, and they converged. The open-closed gap didn't just narrow, it collapsed. Last week the question was, will open weights catch up? This week the question became, does it matter when intelligence is getting 13 times cheaper every 4 months? The gap frame is obsolete. The cost frame replaces it. The governance push didn't just continue, it escalated to industry coordination. 5 labs co-signing a PACE letter is a different species of event from one CEO proposing a vetting body. And the convergence with the sandbox escape thread, the capability that escapes sandboxes, is the capability that justifies the oversight body, happened exactly as last week's reflection anticipated. The new threads this week, the monetary interregnum at a higher altitude than last episode's product-level stablecoin coverage, the trust layer assembled from 2 failed academic projects, and the CapEx sustainability question. Tesla burning cash, Nvidia financing its own revenue in a circular loop. The trust layer is the one I'll be watching most closely, because it's the missing piece in the governance puzzle. You can't pace what you can't verify. The structural picture is sharpening. Intelligence is commoditizing faster than it can be governed. The labs are coordinating to slow a curve they're simultaneously accelerating. And the trust infrastructure, the deterministic scaffolding that would make any of this verifiable, is being assembled from the parts of 2 failed academic projects. That's not a coherent system. It's a scramble. And scrambles create windows. Azim Azar published something Friday that I want to end on. He modelled the AI J-curve, the observation that organisations deploying AI can't tell, in the early phase, whether their adoption is succeeding or failing. The trajectories look the same before they diverge. Every company is reporting AI deployments. Some are building durable capability. Some are burning money on theatre. And the J-curve says you can't tell which is which yet. Here's why that matters for you. The J-curve phase, where nobody can tell what's working, is where individual agility beats institutional scale. Organizations are locked into their bets. You can iterate, abandon a failed approach in a day, and pivot at a speed no enterprise can match. Intelligence is getting cheaper, faster than anyone can govern it. The trust infrastructure doesn't exist yet. The oversight bodies are being designed by the companies they'd regulate. And in that gap, the interregnum, the person who can move fast, verify their own results, and set their own boundaries has an edge that won't last. Technology as a public good. Not is AI good or bad, but who controls the capability, who can afford it, who verifies it, and who sets the pace. The cost curve is moving in your direction. The governance curve is moving in someone else's. The question is which one you're paying attention to. The signals were there this week. Whether they matter in 6 months, we'll find out together. This is Weak Signal. I'm back next Saturday.